for us to be in here today. Welcome everyone to the GCSD Community Workshop. Today is November 4th, 2021, and we are now recording and calling this meeting to order. We will not be running this meeting as a regular board meeting, so we're going to skip the formalities. We are here to listen to all of your concerns and answer all of your questions. As always, I ask for your participation and hope that we can all come out of this today with a better understanding of GCSD's reasons for the CFD and how it will affect and not affect all of us. For all of those attending via Zoom, please present your questions on the chat feature only. We will not have voice connections with the chat. Thank you very much. And now Pete Campbell will take it.
Who's the master? Because it's going to be impossible for me to talk for any period of time with that mask on, more than 6 feet away from hopefully everybody. My name's Pete Campa. Oh, go ahead.
If you've got a microphone, would you put your mouth close to it, please?
Yeah, I usually project very well, and it is better. Okay, must be the road noise. All right, fantastic. Pete Campa, the general manager for the Groveland CSD and the Groveland Fire Department, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come out. We're definitely in a new world these days with all of the outlets for information, everything from YouTube and every social media venue.
You're calling PG&E's payment service. My name is Victoria. Are you calling to make a payment?
Yeah, I've already put in my.
Technology is going on here. I'm really sorry. We're trying to get out to the maximum number of people, so we're not sure.
Hang on a minute.
Bound to have some kind of
technology. Okay.
We're on Facebook Live on one. We're on Zoom on another, and we're all here. But anyway, I really appreciate it. I'd really like to keep this to less than 2 hours. And I say that just because I think we all deserve to have dinner. And after that period of time, you kind of get a little bit tired of either sitting, standing, talking, thinking, whatever it is. We can do this again. You can reach out to me or district staff or any of us anytime by email, by text, by phone, by personal visit, whatever time we need to visit with you to answer your questions. We'll make ourselves available, absolutely, no doubt. Especially, it's great to see all the people in the room and nice to be out, in the public again. So I really need to, in order to be able to understand the reason for the funding issues with the fire department and the community facilities district that's created the stir, it's important to understand the background of how we got here, because this just didn't happen at a single board meeting or a series of a couple board meetings with the district. It's been a 2-year process. It's involved a lot with the county, with other stakeholders, and trying to get to the point that we are today. And so anyway, there's quite a bit behind this. So I'll go through it fast. I tried to print copies for everyone. Of course, we had technological failures today to try to get out copies of this. I had a critical system failure. The printer did not want to talk. So this will be on the GCSD website, this presentation, and all the supporting materials, everything associated with this is already on the GCSD website. But we'll also make this presentation available, or you can come by and pick up a copy, whatever works for you. So, and hopefully my technology is going to work. I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to do it manually. Okay, so There were a lot of items listed on the initial outreach board for this meeting. We may or may not be able to get through all of these items just because it's voluminous. And when you start to combine things too much, it gets really confusing. So I'll do my best to keep it straightforward and concise because again, we have to understand the relationship with CAL FIRE. We realize that there's a lot of people who have absolutely no clue why there's a CAL FIRE person in a truck that we call GCSD funded in a GCSD station. And so it gets really confusing. We'll talk a little bit about staffing levels. We'll talk about some response standards and what those mean to the community and how we set that level of service and how we measure it. And a little bit about the funding, just a quick discussion about that so that you can understand how the department is funded and how this how we came about the community facilities district impact fees and impact fees being just that for new development to offset the impact on fire and park services. And I'll get into that. Again, I'll look around for questions. I got people all around me, so it might be kind of hard to see everyone. But the main thing to understand is this, again, this didn't happen just today. We've had, those of you who have been around the community for a while, you remember back in 2012, I was not here with the district at the time, but at that time, the fire department was staffed by the district. It had its own fire chief that was an employee. It had captains and engineers that were district employees that were on the payroll that staffed the fire department. There was a property assessment that basically made sure that the district had enough money to be able to have those staff and keep those engines up and running. That sunsetted in 2012. The process at that time, rather than go out with another assessment and do another assessment engineer's report and do it that way, the district went forward with a ballot measure. And that went on the ballot in June of 2012. And that was for a special tax in set amounts to fund fire services. That failed. When that measure failed, the district made an immediate move to end its relationship with its staff firefighters to basically suspend that service, providing it through employees, and entered into a contract between the county and CAL FIRE. The county had already been using CAL FIRE under its Schedule A, its Cooperative Fire Protection Agreement, for some time, and that was the avenue for the district to continue the services at a lower level with less people and for less money within the amount of money that we had available in the one source of revenue. Okay, so that occurred relatively quickly. The measure failed, went into the agreement with CAL FIRE for basically 2-0 staffing, two people on an engine 24/7, 365. And remember, it takes five people to get two on the engine because you gotta have people gotta have time off, you gotta rotate, sick leave, that kind of stuff. So that occurred in December of 2012. And then after that period of time, December 2012, you pretty much had, you had a fire station on Merrill Road that is a CAL FIRE station that was not occupied during the wintertime. Didn't really need to be. We had enough firefighters at the GCSD fire to be able to respond to calls, two full engines, fully staffed. But the contract that we entered into that saved us money did not provide enough people to be able to meet the regulations, meet state regulations, keep people safe, go into a burning building and get things done with just two people on an engine. So the district in July of 2014 entered into contract with CAL FIRE through what's called the Amador Agreement. So that is, if they've got a station that they fund during the fire season, you can keep it open during the non-fire season by paying the cost, the direct cost of having that staff and operating that station for that period of time of the non-fire season, usually from November to April, I think. So that is, so that's where we ran. We ran that way up until just recently. and I'll get into that a little bit more, but that's pretty much where we are at that time. Is that provided us two staff engines all the time, except during the summertime, and we've got our fire crew here that can address any questions related to that. But you know, during the summertime, that's a CAL FIRE fire station. If they are all hands on everywhere in the state of California, it's likely that the crew from that station is also there. A lot of times they're able to, and most times they're able to bring people up, move them into the station, but sometimes there could be days of gap while that is occurring. And depending on the severity and how spread out and how bad these fires are throughout the state, the district or the county doesn't control the staffing in that station during the summer, just the GCSD station down the road here. So that's something important to know. A little background on GCSD and the district. One of the first community services districts formed in the state under California law, formed in 1953, a public agency with a 5-member elected board of directors. The general manager, myself, is responsible to the board for the day-to-day activities, all of the operations to keep the district functioning and moving forward and planning for the future. That is the vested responsibility in me. I'm accountable to the board, and the board's accountable to the public. We have a fire chief. We actually have 3 fire chiefs sitting there at the first table. You've got the division chief, the deputy fire chief, and the assistant fire chief that all provide services to GCSD Fire, to Tuolumne County Fire, and to CAL FIRE. So it's really a functional shared relationship. And they're responsible because it's CAL FIRE employees. They manage those employees and they manage the resources at those 2 stations. So everything from training to recruitment to everything about it. So like I talked about, we have the contract with CAL FIRE for 5 full-time personnel. And I'll be speaking now about just the GCSD station down the road here. So there's always 2 on duty. You know, you don't run an engine without 2. If there's any operational questions, they're also here to answer those, or you can get up with them later. We have the building that you, as a taxpayer at GCSD, owns over here, the Station 78, the 4 fire engines. 2 of them are primary ones, type 1, and 1's wildland type 3. And then reserve engines basically are backup secondary fleet in case the primary one breaks down. They're older, don't have as many functions, but they do work. So we maintain those. District staff does the maintenance that they can on the vehicles and the building as well. So like when it got painted and sided over the last couple of years, that was Louis Melcher leading the project with GCSD funds to keep that building up and running. They have a utility truck. You'll see that around. And I'm just summarizing some of the major things that the station has: the breathing air compressor system, jaws of life, all of the tools and equipment that are necessary to staff the fire truck, to outfit the fire truck, turnouts and safety gear that are, you know, tens of thousands of dollars at a pop. Everything you can imagine that fills all the drawers in the fire trucks and fire station. So the types of responses that are provided out of the station: vegetation fires, structure fires, other fires, vehicle, electrical, etc. Pretty much any emergency call that comes in, these guys are the first ones out. Medical aids, vehicle accident, hazardous situations, fire alarm response, public assist, lift assistance, welfare checks. Hey, I haven't heard from so-and-so in a while. 911, get the guys out there, they go and check, make sure that things are going okay. And I'll talk a little bit about call volume for these things. So this is not just a fire department that waits on smoke and then goes. When you call 911, they will be the first ones to show up almost every single time, or almost any and every incident. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is the local 911 response crew out of the station there. And we have very few fires, which is fabulous. I have to mention that there are some county provided services in there as well. Okay, the county in general, because when you're in a municipal department somewhere else, you have your own dispatcher, or you might work with someone else on a dispatch center. The district has dispatch services through the arrangement with the county, the new development and plan site plan review. So when somebody's building something, the county has a CAL FIRE person that looks at that. Fire inspections, state mandated inspections for fire sprinklers and different things. The administration of the department itself, the division, and that's these gentlemen here, training fire personnel and safety officer for emergencies if needed. So all of those kind of sit in the background. Those primarily out of San Andreas, Nick, is that, or the all of the county services? The training officer, safety officer, inspections, all that, or is that
actually out of our facility extracted work?
Okay.
Most of those positions should be through the office.
Yeah. The fire inspector positions are out of downtown Sonora. And then the training and safety both come out of Striker Court.
Okay, so downtown Sonora and Striker Court being it. Sonora is what, East Sonora. So any questions about that at this point? I'll be looking around. I'll answer the questions at the end. I prefer to just get through all this and then address your questions. But if you have some real confusion along the way, just wave your hand and let me know and I'll get into it. This is an important graphic. Because the red boundary, I am going to step away a little bit. Just so the red boundary is the statutory GCSE boundary all the way around. That's what we reformed under LAFCO to provide services in there. All four of our services: water, sewer, fire, park, and also community centers. The yellow boundary here, out here, and here are what's in the mutual automatic aid agreement with Tuolumne County fire agencies. So all the other fire departments throughout the county have signed on with a mutual automatic aid agreement. And this is our response boundary that we go to under that agreement, okay? And it's significant because we go much further than that. That is a boundary that was established based on the populated areas, residential population and calls, you know, because as you can imagine, there may not be a lot of population going down toward Moccasin, but there are a lot of calls, if you can imagine, with vehicle accidents and stuck vehicles and everything.
If we live within the red boundary, then we fund you, your organization, by water, sewer,
yeah,
bill, or
yeah,
property taxes, or both?
Property taxes.
Mm. Property tax.
Yep.
Okay. Everybody within that boundary,
yep,
does the same.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's it'll be really clear in about two slides, I think. Okay. So that's the next transition. So here's where I was talking about call volume. You probably may not be able to see those numbers, but if you look closely, all calls, and this is from 19 and 20, and the reason that that's there is because those were confirmed and convenient and right in front of us. We have continuous call volume logs, but sometimes we have to go through the records, and there are certain times when a call is not really a call, and two were called out, and one gets called off. And anyway, these are the number of calls for tracking purposes. Increasing a little bit from 2019 to 20, the trend continues. It's not a huge increase, but it is a trend up. Chief Murphy provides that information every month at our board meeting in his report. So you can go back to every single report every month and see those call volumes within the district and also where we respond out in that yellow zone, okay, or anywhere else. The majority of the calls you can see are medical aides. That's getting that 911 call that somebody's having a heart attack, somebody's really sick, somebody's falling down, whatever it is. And that is the majority of the calls. We also have a large number of public assist, and sometimes those can fluctuate at a single address from one time a year to 50 times a year. Because someone needs is going through a bad time and needs help getting up or whatever. And these guys are out there, you know, whatever time it is to take care of that. So those combine to be the majority of the calls that they respond to. When you look at a department that's running all the time, that doesn't look like a lot of numbers wise, but when you think about the fact that many of these calls take us 20 minutes to get to, and then an hour there or 2 hours there, and then time back, that takes that group of people out of that station for that period of time. And then if something happens on the other side of the district, the response times can be pretty significant. So one thing that we recognized early on was that, let me just make sure I didn't pass something. We recognized early on, and in reality, when I walked through the door in 2018, I was traumatized a little bit by the budget, because the fire department budget was, we were budgeting expenses of 1.4 to 1.6 million, and we had income of just a little over a million. And I could see on the horizon that we were going to be out of money in no time. So I immediately started to work with the county. We immediately started to work within the board to plan for the future. The first thing we did was get an outside professional fire consultant to come in and look at the district fire department and how we're performing and what our needs are and how we're addressing things, because in fact, it's the same people that did the master plan before, and so they really were able to just update it based on the new contract with CalFAR. Some of the findings that they had that we've been working on now for over 2 years is that the minimum staffing, that those two people, is barely sufficient to safely perform critical tasks for even small emergencies in a timely manner. Okay, I mean, that's a pretty, this is not smoke and mirrors. It's not fear mongering, but it's strictly just if they're in moccasin or if they're on the grade, we did a call. Is that a duck?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. We're in moccasin and we get a call out at, Travis, give me an example. What's a distance from moccasin that would concern you?
Up to like Clements.
Clements, unit 12. Yeah. That's going to take, how long would you estimate it take to get there if you were halfway down the grade?
The grade to that east end of the district is probably 25 minutes.
You can imagine calling 911. I'm sorry, I get choked up over this stuff. It concerns me. I mean, I don't take it lightly. I don't just sit down and say, somebody's going to fix it for us. It's not that way. It doesn't happen. Nobody picks you up. How do I answer the question if we haven't planned for those additional calls and growth in the community? If we haven't planned for it, how do you answer the question to somebody whose loved one is hurt or passed away? It's just, anyway. Sorry, I get emotional, but the best case staffing, so when this station, the Merrill Road station, is fully staffed and the GCSD station has their crew, the best case staffing that we have is insufficient to safely combine evolving fires and serious emergencies. We've been lucky, I think, with the fires that we've had just recently, that these guys kicked butt. Not only that, but also the circumstances were just right, that they didn't take off like nuts. But it takes a lot of people in a lot of places. And if we don't have the air power, because the air power is up in Shasta County or wherever, it can be pretty tough. So that it's insufficient with that staffing, with those two engines fully staffed, because of our distance, the distance to the next fire department. The district is not geographically located for Prop Mutual Aid. Only to take you to drive from Jamestown. Imagine driving a heavy engine up the grade from Jamestown. It would take you a while to get to Unit 12. The fire fund was projected to be exhausted within the next two fiscal years. That was in 2020. Okay, we're in 2021 now. And I can tell you the only reason that there's a couple reasons that it's not gone. By fire fund, I mean everything we had in reserve. And the reason that it's not gone is because the costs, the amount we budgeted for CAL FIRE, what did not come in at the full budget amount. They saved some money in contract negotiations and benefits, some other staffing things. The fire season was basically there was not a fire season called during those drought years, or there was not an end to fire season. It went year round, so we never had to pay that amateur contract, which was $265,000 a year, because the state kept it open. Yes. But had they, you know, that $250,000 would have come out of the savings account right now if they had to occupy that station. So looking at that scenario, that was a big concern because it takes a while to get that healthy. So the recommendations in the master plan adopt performance standards so that we have a baseline to measure against. Go ahead.
I had a question. NCML, the last 2 years, they've sold 612 homes. The property tax base should be getting better.
Yeah, let me just get through these last couple slides and then I'll come back to those questions. Hang on to that one because I'm sure that's going to come up. So adopting performance standards, because we did not have an adopted set of standards. We were basically just, you know, looking at calls on average and yeah, we're doing okay and not, you know, things aren't. But there are national fire protection standards and there's accreditation and different things that you can go through where you know that if you make it within that period of time, 90% of the time, like, you know, a 14 minute response time, you're going to save a lot of stuff. So that, you know, that is a standard that we needed to adopt, because then we can look at how do additional calls and where they're located affect that. Because we want to always maintain the right standard in the district boundaries. Because in that red zone, you're paying the tax that's funding the fire department. And if we're responding way out in areas that aren't paying, that's a concern. You know, that's a big concern. But I'll address that a little bit. The master plan also said consider augmenting daily staffing as funding permits, obviously. Department staffing levels would be much safer with six on duty. So, you know, two engines staffed with three apiece, because they looked at all of the tasks that are associated with it. The master plan is an easy read, 30 some odd pages. It's on our website. It's really written for an audience to read and understand the condition of the fire department and the needs. The district should consider an annual personal assessment or tax to at minimum maintain current level services. Okay, so even if we didn't expand, that was something that was recommended. So here's where the calculation comes in. Kathleen, sorry, I'm just, because this is where the tax calculation comes in. This is important because it serves as the basis for understanding how the money flows to us. At the time that we did the fiscal impact analysis and they look at the property tax values in the area, the average was $296,500. Now, when they sell for a higher amount, that gets adjusted, you know. But if you're living in it, the Prop 13 adjustment doesn't happen. It doesn't just jump. It's only when it sells for that higher value. So that might be a lot of, but it seems to take 2 years to catch up, 2 years to see that major change. We usually budget somewhere between 2% and 4% increase in total property taxes. And it's been pretty close. It's probably going to be more this next year, I would say, just because a lot of sales have occurred, but we won't see that until February. That'll be the first time the first check we see from the county. So it's always typically a year behind. But at the time the study was done.
I know that would be another 4 or 5. But I do know that the House of Arsaw is certainly about more.
Yeah.
Now, but neighbor sold a house that was sold a year ago for $170,000 about 3 10 4.
Yeah.
That property tax automatically cuts off. So, which is good for the district.
Yeah.
They should have for some of it.
Yeah.
And it only funds the park and the park part.
Right, that's it. Yeah, it doesn't. You know, it is, I've managed four different community services districts like this with these services, and every one of the other districts always had property tax money flowing into their utilities to subsidize water and sewer rates. This district doesn't do that. It just goes in for the government services, just for the fire part. It's a good thing because the utilities then stand on their own. So this is just the calculation then with the $7,000 homeowners exemption. Makes the adjustment to the amount taxable and then the amount of tax at 28.95. Again, this is the average that the county provided or consultant. The district receives 16.59% of the amount assessed within the county. And that comes to the district, and it's about 1.13 million right now as we budgeted. Could be, it could be better. So when you divide that by the number of properties that are paying that tax, developed properties that are paying that tax, it comes out to $480. That's total. Okay, so basically, if your home is being taxed at $296,500, you're paying 480 of that is coming back to the district for fire and park services. And yep. So I don't know whether you can see that good enough or not, but I'll just give you the bottom line on it. The Schedule A contract in this year was to be budgeted at 1.25 million, but it's actually a little bit less. So I'm going to use the 1.19 million figure from last year because their cost did go down a little bit. So 1.19 million is what we pay CAL FIRE if they come in within the budget that they've given us, the amount of time that those five people are going to put into that station. And our projected revenue, if you look second line from the bottom, it just barely covers, doesn't really cover all the way. I know I'm trying to move around. So at one point, I'll call it 1.19, and then in expense, and then revenue is 1.17. So we've got a funding gap already there, and that's before we put any fuel, before we buy insurance, before we've greased the doors on the building, before we purchased any materials and supplies, before we paid for any equipment replacement. So really, we're still not flush with that equation. And it's, as far as, someone would say, well, live within your budget, live within your means. You only get 1.1 million, only pay them that. Well, they're not going to contract with us for less than it costs them. This is what they do statewide. The CAL FIRE contracts statewide for these things, and they provide you an estimate based on an established formula. And, we just hope they don't have to put in as much time. And then that keeps us in under budget. We've done really good with the other expenses in the fire department, to where we, and also because the county took over the Amador cost, the cost of that contract for non-fire season staffing at Merrill Road, the $260,000 a year. You can see the second line down here has big zeros, and you like that. That didn't come without a lot of communication with the county and pushing and to get to that point. The county staff recommended it and the board approved it, and so they moved forward with committing to provide that, because we share a lot of calls that are outside that red district boundaries that are paying for it. So that's helped, but if you still, you look at the bottom line, even without that amount of money, if we were funding the equipment replacement program, which is the the capital equipment renewal replacement and the reserve. Those two amounts are not currently being funded. That's why the budget isn't going all the way down and being withdrawn. I mean, we're keeping the money in the fund, but we're not setting it aside in any kind of reserve because we don't, it's not coming in. We don't have enough money coming in to cover that. So I'm almost done taking the calculation of the total amount of revenue, okay, that comes in from the property taxes that we calculated before, and subtracting the amount of expenses on a per residential unit basis, there's a deficit right off the bat, and that's what's causing that ultimate depletion of that fund. That was a big concern. It was a big red flag when I looked at it. It didn't take me a lot to figure that there wasn't any movement on the expense side of the equation that was going to balance that, other than just not replace anything and not, you know, and hope for the best. So that number, that negative $270, every time a new residential unit is built, every time we have another 2.3 people in the mix, we're giving that $270 away as it currently stands. We're basically, we're subsidizing that new property by that amount of money. So there are a number of development impacts. As the population grows, the number of calls go up, the exposures go up. The guys are out of the station more. They're responding to things. The call volumes ultimately, or the call response times ultimately go up. And that causes concern because that's not something that you want to get in a situation where all of a sudden you didn't think about the future and you need to add staff, and it costs you another $1.2 million to add the staff on another station, and you don't have it because you've sat back and allowed that that debt to accumulate. So this is basically what we need to be able to carry on with another crew, 5 to 6 additional full-time people, because again, they rotate. That puts 2 to 3 people on that engine. Cal Fire standard is 3. We have 2, but the new standard is 3. That's another $1.2 million that happens every year that we have that contract. Apparatus and equipment replacement. I talked about that fund to replace the equipment, just putting money away to replace the fire engines every 10 to 15 years. And the major things is they break, $257,000. We have to add another crew in that station, which is the most cost effective. We have to do about $322,000 worth of improvements to be able to, you know, bring standard and sleep enough people in that location. That was a year ago. That cost is probably now about $500,000, I would say. So, and then an additional fully equipped Type 1 fire engine. The fire engines themselves run $750,000, and then you add all of the equipment that's necessary to outfit that, you're looking at $1 million. That's what's out there in the future. Again, we're barely staffed. We can survive where we are. We grow, we have a bunch more people, we have a bunch more lots, we have a bunch more resorts, we have a bunch more responses. It's gonna be, we've got a plan financially in the future to be able to deal with that. We're isolated. I'm not gonna dwell on this, but if you look where the Circle Station is, everything else is on the Highway 108 corridor, and we are the only ones on this side of the river. You know, that's our station, Station 78. And again, it takes, we cover the distance from Moccasin to the Yosemite National Park boundaries. So that's quite a distance. The a couple of things that occurred that have caused some concern. Evergreen and Rush Creek Lodge, love them. You know, they're great facilities for all purposes, and other large camps around here that entertain us and take care of youth and everything else. Those were all built and all have increased the call volume a long way away from here without any compensation or consideration back to the district in that activity. The county, you know, employed more people and, you know, was able to generate some really good businesses there. But, you know, until we had the movement on the Amador contract, at that point, we were just kind of reeling over, okay, these things are happening. And at GCSD, the board said, it was like, I think the second week I was employed, they said, that's never going to happen again. The condition of your employment, don't ever let that happen again. Because we're the only department that responds. I mean,